On this 31st day of October 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 5 entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, and we are in text 23. Shaknoti haiva yaksodham.
Shaknoti haiva yaksodham.
Praksharidiva
mokshanat.
Kama krodod bhavam begam.
Kama krodod bhavam begam.
Sayukta sasukhi naraha.
Sayukta sasukhi naraha.
Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. Purport. If one wants to make steady progress on the path of self-realization, he must try to control the forces of the material senses. There are the forces of talk, forces of anger, forces of mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. One who is able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called a Goswami or Swami. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Material desires, when unsatiated, generate anger, and thus the mind, eyes, and chest become agitated. Therefore, one must practice to control them before one gives up this material body. One who can do this is understood to be self-realized and is thus happy in the state of self-realization. It is the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control desire and anger. Om Jnanatamarandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chukshur Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So in the previous couple of verses, which we focused on last time, Krishna has said very distinctly that one who is Brahma Yoga Yuktatma, who is linked up in yoga with the Brahman, which we understand to be the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, he renounces the external things. Vayasparshesu asakta atma. His self is not attracted to these sensations. Now, he's not in a vacuum. He's enjoying within. We're by nature pleasure-seeking beings because Krishna is anandamaya vyasat. He is by nature full of joy, ananda. So we also intrinsically want to be in that state. But in our present bewildered condition, we're looking for that ananda in the wrong places. We're looking for it in the external sensations and being constantly frustrated. So the solution is to give up or eschew these sensations, this sense gratification. And then we can enjoy unbreakable happiness. And then we had this nice verse, the two nice verses actually here. Ramante yogino nante satyananda charatmani, that the yogi actually enjoys real happiness, ananta, endless happiness, as opposed to the happiness mentioned in text 22, adyantabhag, that has a beginning and an end. Sangsparshadaboga, the happiness that comes from the sense gratification is temporary. And so one who wants permanent happiness doesn't look there. Because if you look there, then you cut yourself off from the chance of the permanent happiness. So, and in fact, Krishna says that such happiness is the source of misery. So someone who's intelligent doesn't look there. And then he quotes this verse from Lord Rishabhdev, famous verse about the need for tapasya. Nayam deho deyabhaja niloka. He's enjoining his sons and other great sages who are gathered there not to be like stool-eating hogs. Very strong words. Remember we had that verse this morning or yesterday. Tato duksangamutsvajja satsu sajjeta buddhiman. One has to be intelligent and associate with the devotees and give up bad association. Because by their strong words, these saints can cut off one's strong attachment in the mind. So these are the strong words of the great sage. He's actually an incarnation of Krishna, Rishabhdev. But it's not simply that you shouldn't live like a hog or, you know, with uncontrolled senses, but you should perform such penance for purification of your existence, sattvam shuddhi, by which you will come to the point of enjoying unending happiness. So there's logic to it. And therefore, Krishna says, one has to, there's these urges that mentioned, Prabhupada's quoting, the natural thing, as soon as you hear the word vega, is to think of the first verse of the Upadeshamrita. Vacho vegam, manasak, krodha vegam, jiva vegam, adaropasta vegam. These are like these six pushings in the conditioned being. There are, some of them are gross and some of them are subtle. The mind, the words, and the anger. These are, you don't see them right away. You see external symptoms, but they occur subtly. And the others are gross: the tongue, belly, and genitals. So, being in this material body, we're getting pushings from each of these because we're conditioned. It's just like if you condition your muscles to play a certain instrument, right, a musical instrument. You don't have to think, you know, all the time. Am I making the right beat? You know, it just comes naturally after a while. So there's all kinds of conditioning that takes place. Some of it's positive, some of it's negative. But all of it is within the body, and it gives certain, you know, urges. Even like, you know, on a positive side, being a musician, you know. I remember when I used to play the flute a lot, I used to play the recorder. It was just like, you know, I'd see it and I'd pick it up. I'd spontaneously want to do it. I had like a desire to do that. I knew I could play it, you know, to make music. But, you know, before I learned how to play it, I didn't have the desire. You know, I didn't have that spontaneous thing. In fact, I had to be kind of dragged to my clarinet lessons, you know, at first when I was a kid. So that's a kind of conditioning. And it goes on all levels, on the subtle level, you know, but in modes of nature. It's very complex. So those things stay in you, you know, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are all affected by the modes of nature and by your environment, by your sangha, what you call association. So then that means that you get up in the morning and there's going to be push. I got to go to work. You know, the mind is telling you. You do it, you know. And then along the way, you know, you may light up a cigarette and got to do it, you know. And as each time in the day, certain urges come up in the appropriate environment. There's always the belly, you know, ready to tell you you're hungry, you know. So it's these things are with us. But a yogi, you're trying to transcend this. You're trying to come to a higher level, that you're not simply responding to the urges of the mind and the senses and the voice and the belly and genitals and this. You know, that's the animal life, ultimately. You're helpless. You're tied up. So therefore, Krishna says, before one gives us a body, before you die, you have to come to the state of being able to resist these. Otherwise, you get another body and you're controlled again by these urges, and it's another term of imprisonment. Maybe not even a human body. So kama, krodha, and you remember at the end of the third chapter, these two are very strong. You know, the kama and krodha are said to be the real enemies, anger and lust and anger. You know, so here these are vegas. If one can shaknoti, if one can is able to sodhum, to tolerate. Toleration just doesn't mean to tolerate, you know, cold and heat or even insult. It also means tolerating from what's coming from within. The urge to do this, the urge to do that. And the only way to come to that point, as emphasized in many places, is by strengthening the intelligence. That's where the will resides. Because the will means you're doing something that doesn't come exactly naturally. Right? In other words, you know that if you follow this path, it'll be good for you. But your mind and your senses are telling you to go in a different path. But the strong intelligence says, no, we're going to go in this path. You know, and that's really where your yoga begins. You know, and eventually you get into the routine, or you get into a different conditioning, where you're used to, or you're habituated to, you know, saying no to this and no, and gradually, after a while, the vagas, they cool down. You know, this is explained. Kapila Deva also says Maya releases. Maya doesn't act as strongly on those who are practicing, you know, thinking of me, meditating on me, and tolerating these urges. So that's what Krishna is speaking about here, that one can be happy in this world by being yukta, by being linked up in yoga with Brahman, as he just explained. But in order to do that, one has to control these urges, because it goes, they're diametrically opposed. You know, one is bahir, outside, and one is antar, inside. One is toward Krishna, and one is toward maya. You can't go in both directions at once. So this is what's being explained here. And now he's going to talk about, again, the internal state, you know, everything, antar jyotir, in the next verse. Any questions on this verse? Basic, you know, injunction, yama niyama, you know, self-control, those are the first principles, the do's and the don'ts. Okay, text 24, yontak sukontara aramas. Tatantar jyotireva yaha. Sayogi brahman nirvanam. Brahmabhuto digacchati. One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the supreme, and ultimately he attains the supreme. Purport. Unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. He can, therefore, sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. This state is called Brahmabhuta, attaining which one is assured of going back to Godhead, back to home. So, we don't often remember this, but it's actually a fact that any happiness that we're experiencing in Krishna consciousness, and we're all experiencing something, otherwise we couldn't go on, is really coming from inside. It's coming from contacting Krishna, who's after all within each of us as a super soul. It's not exactly that. You know, of course, we can see the deities, we can hear the holy name, we can taste the prasad, we can do so many things with all of our senses, mind, intelligence. But it's not it's not the sensation, you know, that we're experiencing. But it's actually Krishna who is appearing through our senses, who is using our senses as a medium to impinge on our consciousness. And that means that even when your senses are inactive, like the Prabhupada says, you can just be sitting under a tree. Now, an ordinary person cannot do that. He may sit there for a few minutes and enjoy the shade or whatever, but the mind will become restless, the senses will become restless and pull you away, going here and there. But a great devotee who has a full inner life of meditating on his relationship with Krishna and acting in that relationship, you see, he can be happy anywhere. He can be in that relationship, even the most difficult circumstance. We'll read about that in the next chapter, in text 20 to 23, where Krishna describes what it means to be in samadhi. And that having achieved that state, one thinks there's no higher state. One is always situated in this highest happiness, experienced with transcendental senses, which aren't really dependent on the external senses. So there's a categorical difference there. And he says, in happiness within, enjoying within, and illumined within. Prabhupada says aiming within. So you're aiming for it and you experience all of these things. And Brahma Nirvana, that phrase is also there at the end of the second chapter. Remember he's talking about peace. It's the same idea, controlling the senses. One attains Brahma Nirvana. So what does Nirvana mean? Prabhupada said Nirvana means finished. It means finished. All of the involvement in these vagas, in these urges of the senses and sense gratification. But it means finished in relationship to Brahman. In other words, you're on the platform of Brahmabhuta's promises. In Brahmabhuta Prasanama, that'll be described in the 18th chapter. And how to achieve that state? That's there in the 14th chapter. Mam chayo abhyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. By undeviating devotional service to Krishna, one comes to the platform of Brahman. And that's the state of natural happiness. It says, Brahmanohi pratishtaham amritasyabhyasya shasvatasya chadharmasa sukhasyakantikasya. So it's a natural state of the living entities to be in that situation of Brahman, beyond the modes of nature. And he says, I'm the basis of it. Amritasyabhyasya, it's eternal, full of nectar. It doesn't degrade. This word avyaya appears again and again. Every other state in this world degrades. Any kind of happiness or pleasure, it always ends, but not this state. It's eternal, it is constitutional, and it is the constitutional position of happiness. Dharmas sukhasya ikantika sitcha. The end of happiness. Sukhasya anta, the end of happiness. So that's something to be striven for. If we hear about that state and we experience little, inklings of it, and we see and hear about, read about those who have attained that state, then it's worth striving for, because there is striving to be done. We're all sitting in these bodies, and we're conditioned for millions and millions of lifetimes. So it's not easy to overcome the pushings and the urgings of the mind and the voice and the lust, anger, etc. So it takes training, and that's what Krishna is encouraging us to do, to get happiness in this way, by coming in touch with the Supreme Brahman, Krishna. Okay, any questions on this? He talks about Brahman Nirvana in these verses now, 3 or 4 in a row now. So, very important. Labhante Brahman Nirvanam. Vishayakshina Kalmasha. Chinna dvaidha yatatmana sarvabhuta hiterita. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within, who are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings, and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme Purport. Only a person who is fully in Krishna consciousness can be said to be engaged in welfare work for all living entities. When a person is actually in the knowledge that Krishna is the fountainhead of everything, then when he acts in that spirit, he acts for everyone. The sufferings of humanity are due to forgetfulness of Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the supreme friend. Therefore, to act to revive this consciousness within the entire human society is the highest welfare work. One cannot be engaged in such first-class welfare work without being liberated in the Supreme. What's the problem? A Krishna conscious person has no doubt about the supremacy of Krishna. He has no doubt because he is completely freed from all sins. This is the state of divine love. A person engaged only in ministering to the physical welfare of human society cannot factually help anyone. Temporary relief of the external body and the mind is not satisfactory. The real cause of one's difficulties in the hard struggle for life may be found in one's forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. When a man is fully conscious of his relationship with Krishna, he is actually a liberated soul, although he may be in the material tabernacle. I'm sorry?
Tabernacle?
Yeah, it's just a fancy way of saying body. Yeah. So again, Brahman Nirvana, China Kalmasha, this means that all the sins and sinful reactions are finished. And the sense of duality is also destroyed, cut off. Yatatmana, striving, engaged in self-realization. And then this idea of working for the welfare of all. Krishna periodically comes back to that as a prerequisite, really, for pleasing him and going back to Godhead. So this naturally comes if one is on this platform, and remember there's this whole vision that comes with it, seeing everyone equally as a spirit soul. Then there's also that sense of kinship. If the Supreme Father is Krishna, then all of us are kin. We're all related. The external body doesn't matter. Each of us is spirit soul. So a real devotee, the heart softens and you are empathetic. Paradukha dukhi, this famous phrase from describing Sanatana, I think, or Goswami, that someone else's difficulty or pain is your own. It means padadukha dukhi, unhappy to see others suffering. Now, there's a little paradox there, because on one sense, Parodananda Saraswati describes Vishram Purna Sukhayate, that a devotee who has become realized, who gets the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for him the whole world is full of happiness. In other words, personally, he can be happy anywhere. Just like Prabhupada showed, you know, even in the difficulty of that crossing and the Jaladutta and that year in New York and the cold, there was an inner happiness that and peace that couldn't be shaken. Antak sukha means happy within. Because he's always with Krishna, right? So that can't be shaken. But still, he's undergoing all these difficulties because he's seeing the suffering of everybody. So that's why we say, you know, an ocean of compassion or a cloud of compassion. You know, and doing the right thing that can actually help people. The welfare work, which is giving them Krishna consciousness. Because the root of all the suffering is this bodily concept of life, is our misidentification with the body, and our entanglement in the modes of nature that are keeping us completely bewildered about who we are and where our real happiness lies. So someone who can bring that knowledge and show by example how to live differently and give the process by which one can make progress out of that misconception, well, how could there be a greater welfare work? And so that's what, you know, Krishna is saying here. Hite, you know, hite means the welfare of others. Let's see. Okay. And so such a person is truly free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. So that's this Brahma Nirvana, in a Nirvana, that this state. And it's highly coveted. You know, it's really non-different from Krishna consciousness. But Krishna is talking here kind of in a yogic kind of way, this all this business of being internal. And now he's going to kind of introduce the next chapter in text 27-28. It's a little hint of the yoga process of sitting and crawling the mind and, you know, thinking within. But all of this is the action in Krishna consciousness, karma yoga, in this state of being beyond the of not being controlled by the modes of nature, and always, you know, remembering Krishna within. We saw that in Prabhupada. Okay, any questions here? Only a person who's with fully Krishna consciousness can do welfare work. This is a constant theme. Okay, again, kama and krodha. Kama krodha vimuktanam. Yatinam yatachetasam. Abhito brahma nirvanam. Vartate viditatmanam. Again with the Brahma Nirvana. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So that's the Prabhupada's phrase for the Brahma Nirvana, liberation in the Supreme. Purport. Of the saintly persons who are constantly engaged in striving toward salvation, one who is in Krishna consciousness is the best of all. The Bhagavatam 4.22.39 confirms this fact as follows. Yatpada pankaja palasha bilasa bhaktya karmasha yam gratitam udgranta yanti santaha tadvanna rikta matayo yata yopi ruddha sroto ganasta madanam vajavasudevam. Just try to worship in devotional service Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even great sages are not able to control the forces of the senses as effectively as those who are engaged in transcendental bliss by serving the lotus feet of the Lord, uprooting the deep-grown desire for fruitive activities. In the conditioned soul, the desire to enjoy the fruitive results of work is so deep-rooted that it is very difficult even for the great sages to control such desires despite great endeavors. The devotee of the Lord, constantly engaged in devotional service in Krishna consciousness, perfect in self-realization, very quickly attains liberation in the Supreme. Owing to his complete knowledge in self-realization, he always remains in trance. To cite an analogous example of this, darshana dhyana sangsparsha, matsya kurma bahangama, sva nipatyani pushnanti tataham api padmaja. By vision, by meditation, and by touch only do the fish the tortoise, and the birds maintain their offspring. Similarly do I also, O Padmaja. The fish brings up its offspring simply by looking at them. The tortoise brings up its offspring simply by meditation. The eggs of the tortoise are laid on land, and the tortoise meditates on the eggs while in the water. Similarly, the devotee in Krishna consciousness, although far away from the Lord's abode, can elevate himself to that abode simply by thinking of him constantly, by engagement in Krishna consciousness. He does not feel the pangs of material miseries. This state of life is called Brahma Nirvana, or the absence of material miseries due to being constantly immersed in the Supreme. So, this is interesting, because now we're really talking about meditation. And first of all, this wonderful verse, Prabhupada, I once heard Prabhupada give a lecture on this verse in the fourth canto quoted above. And he really was relishing, you know, Yatpada Pungaja Palasya Vilasa Bhaktya. He's chanting that line again and again. And what that literally means, you have Pada Pankaja Palash. So the Pankaja means lotus and Palasha means petal. So Pada Pankaja Palash means the toes of the lotus feet. Vilas Bhakti. By Bhakti, you're enjoying, Vilas means to enjoy spiritually. Enjoy the service of the lotus toes and the lotus feet of Krishna. And therefore, karmashayam graditam udgutayanti. So here we get this idea of the knots in the heart. You know, graditam. When you enjoy something, you tie a little knot in your heart, in your consciousness, to that thing. And you want to enjoy it again. You remember we read recently how the objects of the senses, the mind enters into the objects of the senses and the sense enters into the mind. That's called sangha. You know, you're meditating, and that memory then enters into the mind of a certain enjoyment. That's the knot. You want to do it again and again and again and again and again, well, forever. You know, but you can't because there's a limit. You know, the object isn't there, or your ability to enjoy it isn't there. So, but the knot is there. So that's called a karmashayam gratitam. Means the knot of a hope of enjoying fruit of activity. Karmashayam gritam. We all experience that. But here it says, udgutayanti. The knots are untied or cut for the santas, for the saints, for the devotees. Now, how do they cut it? Simply by the enjoyment of serving Krishna's lotus feet. That enjoyment is the sword that cuts the knot, if you will. In other words, it's sublimated. Just as, you know, almost perfectly what, you know, the idea of the psychological sublimation. A higher pleasure destroys the lower pleasure. Krishna explained second chapter. That the yogis, as described in this verse also, by force remove themselves from the objects of the senses. They generally physically do so. You know, real yogis you won't find in the city streets here. They're in the mountains, in the hills, you know, somewhere. They can be in the hills of America. You know, you won't find them there, but I remember driving through the desert, you know, and there's these mountains and these hills and these Rockies. There's nothing there. There's nobody there. There's no foliage, nothing. You know, that's the kind of place where you can really get separated from the objects of the senses. You know, up in the high in the Himalayas or something. You know, why do they search out those spots? Away from the temptations. Quiet, you know, peaceful. Nothing can, the mind has to be, you know, controlled. So, but they don't get the bhakti vilas. They don't get the pleasure of serving Krishna's lotus feet, generally, if they're doing kind of impersonal meditation. So therefore, Krishna says, narikta matayo yatayopi, that those who are not devotees, they cannot stop that force. They cannot stop they cannot untie the knots. They remain in there, even though dormant for some time. You know, they're still there, that desire to enjoy. And in this life or a future life, they come out. So therefore, he says, even though striving very hard, rudhas roto ganas, the waves of the desire eventually overwhelm them. And so he has this. This is the four Kumaras speaking. It's Sanat Kumar teaching Maharaj Prithu. He's near the end of his instructions. It says, Bhaja Vasudeva. Therefore, you should worship Vasudeva. So this is a serious thing. Otherwise, how can we be yogis? You know. Is anyone going to really practice, you know, become isolated from all of this and practice all of these technical aspects to try to withdraw the mind from the senses, it's impossible for us, really. But this is possible. It's possible to experience the pleasure of serving Krishna's lotus feet, and in this way to cut off, you know, the desires in the mind. Generally, there's all kinds of levels, you know. The superficial desires, like I like to give the example of meat eating. Well, that's not so hard to get, you know, to get rid of that. You know, if we're in a little Krishna consciousness and a few pakoras and nice prasadam, and you can forget about that. I mean, a lot of people give that up even before coming to Krishna consciousness. But, you know, that's an addiction. If you have no spiritual knowledge at all, they can also be very enticing. But so that gets cut off. But there's other deeper things, the sex desire, this desire, the subtle desires for name and fame, comfort, all of these things, you know. But even all of those, if one is truly experiencing the higher taste in Krishna consciousness and is steady, then you can stay on that platform. And we've seen it even in our contemporaries, some of the great devotees who've already gone back to Godhead. So there's some hope. And then this other, you know, lower verse here, it's very interesting, is that, you know, what you think of is so important. I mean, that's the whole point, you know, but we sometimes forget it. That just thinking of Krishna, you know, just chanting the holy name and seeing the deity and really, you know, watching where the mind goes, is a very powerful force. This Krishna says it again and again. And, you know, here he's giving these examples from the natural world about how just thinking, meditating on, you know, and touching is a force that brings, you know, this is how they bring up their young, apparently. But at the end of the purport, he says, and the great devotees, they don't feel the pangs of this material world as much, nearly as much, because the mind is absorbed. You know, we hear that from Kapila Dev also, that from hearing and chanting, you know, which is a kind of yoga. He says it's the easiest kind of yoga, but it's still yoga. Always being absorbed in the sound vibration, hearing and chanting of transcendental Sabda Brahman. What do you say? Tapanti vibhadas tapan naitan madgata chetasa. Tapanti vibhadas tapan. The tapa doesn't, you know, the pains don't impinge upon your consciousness so much because your mind has gone to me. You know, even in the material sphere, you find on the battlefield or in the football field, you know, someone can get injured and not even know it because there's so much, in, you know, the mind is so much absorbed in what you're doing. You know, but then at a certain point, you say, "Oh my God, I'm injured." You know, well, what to speak of if you can train the mind to be absorbed in transcendence, then you can become less whipped around by the threefold miseries for sure, because you're always drinking that, you know, that pleasure, that nectar of Krishna consciousness. And that's what we see, the great devotees, the Goswamis. You know, how could they go from, many of them, from a very wealthy, comfortable position to an extremely austere position, walking around Vrindavan with, you know, with a loincloth under a tree, you know, and hardly eating or sleeping, and yet being gopi bhavada samatabda the hadika lola magnamaho? And that they're the happiest, they were the richest in the world. Externally, they were the poorest, but they were really the richest, because they're always diving and, you know, drinking the waves of the nectar of the gopis' love for Krishna. So that's all of that is, you know, supported in the Bhagavad Gita here. He's not talking about the gopis and Krishna and you know, the rasa dance, but being absorbed in Brahma Nirvana, and as in the purport here, you know, getting the nectar of serving the lotus feet of Krishna, it's the same ultimate, you know, idea. Beyond all any hint or any vestige of sinful reaction, of complete absorption, the purification of the heart, experiencing more and more the presence of Krishna in one's life, and drinking, being able to drink that nectar in any circumstance, you know, and at the same time, serving the welfare of others. This is the Sankirtan movement. It's coming right out of the Gita. You know, you have to be able to empathize. That's part of what it means to be Krishna conscious. Okay, any questions on this verse? We're coming up real close to the peace formula.
I have a question.
Yes.
So, to enjoy with the transcendental senses while in the material body, can you explain that a little more? Does that mean you have, like, you're enjoying through your swarup, or is it...
Yeah, I mean, there's... We have to understand that these senses that we have are not our real senses. They're kind of given to us as expressions or as, you know, transformations of the false ego. And that false ego is false. It's not our real being. So, buried within, you know, the soul itself is, we know, it's a particle of consciousness. But it also has a form. We also have our original spiritual senses. And even within this body, we can discover that form. This is explained in the Madhya Lila, I think, in the conversation with Ramananda Roy. How because actually, you know, you don't actually perceive with these senses. You perceive with the mind, you know, and the soul is perceiving. So if you're, and you can experience that, Prabhupada gives the example. If you're absorbed in something, you may not hear, you know, the car is going by. But you're absorbed in thinking of something, or you're focusing on the kirtan. You're not even aware of it's happening, you know. Even though the mechanism may still be working, but your mind is fixed elsewhere. So in the same way, if we're constantly absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and remember, Krishna doesn't just mean Krishna alone. Krishna is his entourage and his pastimes and his place, his Vrindavan, and all of that. You know, we get descriptions of that. It's in the sound vibration. Then eventually you're given a realization of what your place is in that, those lila. You know, this is our faith, this is our understanding. So the great acharyas, they live on these two planes. Within, they're always engaged in their personal service to Krishna. You know, in their sarup, what it calls siddhadeya, perfected body, sarup siddhi. But externally, they still, you know, are living out, you know, the term of this particular body that they have. And those senses are also spiritualized, even the external senses, because they're always engaged in Krishna consciousness, you know. So it's just like being plugged in, like an electric current. So therefore, the physical bodies of the great devotees are also considered spiritual and not burned. You know, why burn the body after death? Because the soul is, you know, hanging around, you know, it's still attached to that body. As soon as you burn it, there's no question that it's able to go on. It's a clean break, you know. But for the great acharyas, they're not attached to the body. There's no question of that. And the body is recognized to have been spiritualized. So when we speak of the spiritual senses, you have to know in what context you're spirit. In one sense, the great devotees, their senses are all spiritual. And they also see, you know, through these senses differently than we do. But in addition, they have that internal form, you know, that's not exactly like his form, but it's the form of a coward boy, coward girl, whatever it may be, and they're engaged in their personal service to Krishna. So it's a mystery, really. You know, we can't really experience it, but we can experience that even these senses that we have are changing in Krishna consciousness. We see the deity differently after a year or less in Krishna consciousness. You purify your consciousness, your vision. You know, someone walking in off the street for the first time may not even see the deity. You know, a Muslim will see a great offense. You know, I've seen it. You know, you have to hold them back sometimes. Yeah, I saw it in New York. And the devotee, you know, who's, depending on his purity, will be just enthralled to see that beautiful form of Krishna, will experience Krishna's wonderful smile coming at him, you know. It's all a question of consciousness. So, a good example of this is Bilva Mangal Thakur. Bilva Mangal Thakur was physically blind. There's a whole story about how he became blind, which I won't get into. But he constantly speaks about in his Krishna Karanamrita of seeing the Lord, you know. Tadidnamapanatam tamala neelam tadadabilochana tadakabiramam hujitabuddhavaktachandabindam mukadadavedabilasajivadam. This is a verse describing Krishna appearing to him. The Karnamrita is a very nice form. It kind of builds up, you know, to a climax because he's longing to see the Lord. And one of the Hey Deva, Hey Daya, the Hey Bhavanaika Bandha, this is quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, famous verses. Hey Deva, Hey Dayata, Hey Bhavanaika Bandho, Hey Krishna, Hey Chapala, Hey Kodanaika Sindhu, Hey Nata, Hey Ramana, Hey Bhavanaika Nata, Ha Ha Kadanu, Bhavadasi Padam Drishoni. This is, Oh Lord, oh my beloved, Hey Deva, hey Dayata, hey Bhuvanaika Bandha, O only friend of the universe. O Krishna, O my enjoyer. O only ocean of mercy. I know. When will you pass before the path of my eyes again? You know, again and again, he's longing like this. And then at a certain point, he says, Oh, he's come before me. He's Cupid himself. He's surrounded by this aura of sweetness. You know, he starts describing in detail, you know, all of this. Well, what is he seeing with? You know, he's seeing inside. But he's seeing as clearly as, you know, he can see outside. It's an amazing thing. You know, whereas an ordinary blind person, I can't see this, can't see that, you know. But someone who's seeing spiritually has got this whole internal life, you know. And Krishna is not dependent on, you know, revealing himself on our external senses, you know. He can do it internally too. Okay, what time is it? So why don't we just go through this next one, because then we'll come to the peace formula. We can do that next time. Actually, it's kind of a long purport. All right, why don't we pick up there tomorrow? Has a little hint of the next chapter. It talks about meditation. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.